good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut a dude.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, I just want to give a shout-out to Marlene, whose birthday's out there. I just want to give a quick shout-out to
happy
Reverend,
birthday.
Reverend Marlene, and she's a Ho-Chunk, and so that even makes it more special. I also want to watch that cat video really bad right now, but I know we have a radio show, so... Yeah, we should try that out, Wendy.
That's really funny. I have not laughed that hard in a really long time.
I remember the days when we used to pray before the show, and now we're watching cat videos.
Oh, my gosh.
Or I'm cat
not,
lawyers.
I'm not a cat.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, why don't we...
And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline, 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
So why don't we quickly run to Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Anim Buju, Robert and Wendy. I am Ogama Ganuakwe. I have some news for you today on just a couple of things on line 3. Tomorrow at 7:30 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, Line 3 Virtual Calls to Action meeting is happening. It is hosted by MN350. You can get involved on the biweekly call to get an update on the status of Line 3 and the upcoming opportunities to get involved to stop it. You can sign up at mn350.org. Kind of working into the Line 3, there's a lot of events happening this week surrounding missing and murdered Indigenous women and relatives, which is something that affects Native tribes all over the country. And on Thursday, there's going to be a missing and murdered relatives and women's task force for missing and murdered relatives week of awareness. And that's going to be hosted by the Indigenous Environmental Network. That one is Thursday, February 11th at 6 p.m. And then also Camp McGeezy on Sunday is going to have missing and murdered Indigenous women and relatives Stand for Women, Stand with Water event. That starts at noon this coming Sunday at Camp McGeezy. It is really important to make sure we talk about the intersectionality between human trafficking and the extraction companies like Enbridge and their subcontractors that make that to be something that is more common. That's why we always get upset when these projects come through Indian country. They mean a lot of strangers. They mean people preying on other people. And those kinds of things are not what we are willing to take in Indian country. So coming up later today, we're going to have Angelica on from the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. And before we have her on, I just wanted to touch base on kind of a news story that I had read earlier today on ABC. There were two gentlemen who worked at, they were sanitation workers. And during their route, they happened to see a car that was in the middle of a field. And they thought something wasn't right with that. So they parked their truck so that the vehicle couldn't get back out the way it had gone into the field. And they called the police. And the police were actually able to go arrest the driver and rescue a girl who had been abducted by the driver. The driver was known to her family. He was an acquaintance of the family and had abducted her. I believe she was like 10 years old. So they saved her because they noticed that something was out of place and they chose to do something about it. And sex trafficking and human trafficking is something, kidnapping, you know, our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. Those are things that happen in Indian country a lot. And I don't really hear a lot of people talking about, you know, the things that you might need to keep an eye out for when it comes to looking for human trafficking or those types of things. So I just wanted to take a little bit of time today to do my part for the missing and murdered Indigenous relatives and give some pointers for people to watch out for those signs in your community and in people that you know. So some of those signs of being involved in a situation where they may be trafficked, some of the big red flags are going to be situations where an employer is collecting fees from a potential worker for the opportunity to work in a particular job. A friend or a family member or a coworker, a student that you know, is going to be newly showered with gifts or money that really has no explanation. They're just going to be showing up with these fancy things, and maybe they won't tell you where they came from. Or they may be involved in a very fast-moving asymmetrical relationship, meaning there's a large difference in age or financial status. Usually those relationships are romantic, but within, younger children, it could just be a red flag whether or not the relationship seems romantic in nature. If you have a friend or a family member or a student that is a frequent runaway or frequently truant or staying with somebody who's not their parent or guardian and feels like they can't leave, that's another big red flag to watch out for. Having a friend, a family member, a coworker, or a student developing a relationship that seems too close with somebody that they only know on social media. In our technology, in our day and age, that's, I think, one that could be easily missed. You need to make sure you're watching out for your friends and your relatives. Obviously, any signs of abuse are a big option, or a big item that could point you into the direction that they're in a situation that they need help with. Another one that I actually just recently learned, I didn't even think about this one, but it makes sense to me to hear it, is having somebody close to you who's offered a job opportunity that seems too good to be true. Like somebody's offered a job where they're going to make a really large amount of money and they're maybe going to have to move away, or that person is offering them, you know, lodging, because a lot of times in sex trafficking or human trafficking, people are staying with their employer or their abuser. So that is a big red flag that was new to me. I didn't know that one. Did you know that one, Robert?
No, not at all. Wendy, did you? And I'm wondering, I want to ask you both before we have to leave. Isn't there a signal by a person that is being abducted? What is that signal?
Oh, gosh.
There is a hand signal, isn't there?
Signal of a woman who's being abused. Yeah. I think it's like holding your four fingers up with your thumb tucked under.
Thumb tucked, yeah.
Forward. I think I would have to double check and relook at that. But I know.
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
They have a high, you know, there's a lot of people at the airport looking for sex, trafficking at the airports, like looking at those things that you mentioned, like, you know, of course it could be a father and a daughter, but things that just don't look, you know, normal or look out of the ordinary.
Well, let's hope they do and are, because a lot of things have been looked the other way and not really looked into, because we talk about the people that have been victims that were gone for 10 years and found.
Oh, my gosh.
And people mm-hmm. say anything, and they knew stuff was weird. So there's that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, if you see something, you should say something. You know, they have those signs all over the airport. Mm-hmm. Those signs now need to be all over our lives, that if you see something that's out of the ordinary, you should say something and you should call somebody. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to my next topic. If you live in Minnesota, and you are concerned or you want some advice about, you have a friend that's showing low self-esteem, self-harm, an eating disorder, or being very secretive, maybe getting those unexplained money and presents, or has recently started using drugs or alcohol. You may notice those things in your friends or in your family members and you're not sure who to call. The Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition is a really good place to call. Their phone number is 651-646-4800, or you can call them toll free at 1-877-995-4800. And then if you live outside of Minnesota, if you're listening in any of our affiliate stations, there is the National Human Trafficking Hotline. Their number is 888-373-7800.
888.
We'll be right back.
And I think
back.
Those are.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back with Anelika Heller.
We have vital information we would like to share with you. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on testing sites, isolation space, vaccines, housing assistance, and food resources. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19 or has questions to determine if you should get tested, please call them at 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986. That's 651-304-9986.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org, mn350.org, or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, each year there's a, I don't know, there's things going on in the Twin Cities with murdered, missing, and indigenous women. Mm-hmm. And one of the groups that are in the forefront nationally of that is that group that you just mentioned, Wendy.
Yeah.
Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. And today we're really blessed to have Anelika Allery on. And welcome, Anelika.
Hi, bonjour, Nibinabe Kwe Indigenakaz, Mayangan Indu Dame. Hello, relatives. My name is Anelika Allery. I am the membership and outreach coordinator for Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition. And I just wanted to speak with you today to help bring awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. For the past 6 years, we have had a live march over in Minneapolis, hosted by the American Indian Center, Minneapolis American Indian Center. And this year looks a little different since we are in a virtual world, of course. So we have brought our 7th annual MMIW, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives, event virtually. So tomorrow will be the first day. It's starting with a sacred fire, and then we'll be ending with a live panel on Facebook. And so I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about what this means and kind of what this is. So the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition is in collaboration with 16 organizations. And so we will host 4 days of a virtual events, concluding with the Facebook Live event at 12 p.m. Central Standard Time on February 14th. So their speakers include Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, Senator Kunish, Commissioner Harrington, and then in addition to our community and Indigenous and Black youth activists. So I'd like to say a quote by our Executive Director, Nicole Matthews. And she had said that we are virtual this year, but for 6 years, we have marched in the bitter cold on February 14th to demand visibility and justice for our people. The continued failure to adequately respond to and protect our Indigenous relatives is a human rights issue. We can and must do better, she said. I wanted to say that Indigenous women, girls, men, boys, and our LGBTQIA and Two-Spirit, transgender, and non-conforming people continue to be targeted for murder, abduction, and go missing across Minnesota's urban, rural, and reservation populations. It's appearing at alarming rates with very little publicity, visibility, and justice.
Wow.
So, yeah, the Minnesota Task Force report states that Indigenous women make up only 1% of Minnesota's population, yet they make up 8% of those missing and murdered in any given month from 2012 to 2020. There were 27 to 54 missing Indigenous women and girls in Minnesota. And so for our first day of events, which will be starting tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. at the Elders Lodge in St. Paul, Minnesota, our elders from Ogechidakwe Council will be gathering and starting a sacred fire for us. And that'll be staying lit until February 14th at sunset. And we encourage you, our community, to light a candle, light your own sacred fire at home, and to bring honor for our relatives, our sisters, our brothers, our children, our grandmothers and grandfathers, and to remember those whose lives were lost to violence and those who have not received justice. We ask you to, if you are able to, take a picture of your fire, take a picture of your candle, and post it on our event page. And our event page is called 2021 MMIWR Virtual Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives 4-Day Event. And so that'll be on our first day, which will be starting tomorrow. And then day two, we'll be having a virtual art workshop from 12 to 1. And that'll be with Rory Wake 'em Up. And the hashtag that we'll be using to with our art pieces, and we ask our community to create art in honor of our Indigenous and murdered relatives. And that hashtag is MMIRArt2021. On day three, we'll be doing a virtual community sharing day. And so that is a day where we ask you, our relatives, our community, our nations, to take a picture of any artwork that you've created, any poems, physical pieces, if that's writing, stories. If you have relatives who are missing currently and you need any flyers, post their photos, we will have that on the Facebook event page. And we encourage you to also post flyers on our event page as well. We encourage you to post, if you're making TikToks, if you're one of the people, cool young people who are into media, creating, different Snapchats, videos, if that's, you're doing makeup, anything that can really help bring awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. On day four, we'll be going live with a Facebook event starting from 12 p.m. Central Standard Time to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. And for that hashtag, it'll be MMIWGR Minnesota 2021. And so I wanted to say that we're bringing awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives, and we're shifting that language to relatives so we know that it's not just our women and our girls that go missing and that are murdered. But it's all of our whole community, and shifting the language is helpful to all of us, because what affects one affects us all. And I think that it's really important for us to stay true to ourselves and our whole community. And so we'll be having our hashtags that you can use for each of the events on our Facebook page. And I do want to mention that Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan are in the process of writing a proclamation to commit Minnesota in the work of raising awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. We have 16 collaborating organizations that are working with us, and this movement is growing larger and larger, each year. And we have, movements going up in Duluth, in Bemidji, in the Twin Cities, and in different states. And we even have an organization that is from Chicago, and they're helping us. And the more people that are really in touch and in tune with this, epidemic, the more we can help our future generations. And so we know that Native people are affected at high rates, but we also know that our Black, Indigenous, our relatives, our whole communities, we're all affected. And when we all work together, we can stand up and really make change and create movement and create a better future for all of us. I did want to say that on February 14th, the 35W Bridge will be lit red in honor of our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. That is on Valentine's Day, so, you know, red, wear red to share your support, show your support. You know, if that's wearing red, doing red makeup, wearing a nice red lipstick, you know, maybe you've got your red attire going, you know, take a picture, take a selfie, post it on our event page, you know, tag us. And, you know, I think it'll be really great to show and see where all of you are coming from, where you're located, you know. And also we encourage you to, you know, maybe purchase some red lights, red light bulbs, hang them on your front porch, you know, show that red light and that red, that support for our missing and murdered relatives. You know, we also encourage you to, you know, if you have any pieces of red fabric, a red dress, to hang that in your front, the front of your house, in a tree. You know, if you want to make a tobacco tie in honor of our relatives, put that good medicine and good spirit and energy into that tobacco tie. And, you know, have community conversations. If someone asks you why, what's the significance of red, you can tell them that this is to bring honor, respect, and justice for our relatives who are continued to stay missing, and also for the people that are going out actively searching to find our relatives.
Wow. And Helica, thank you so much for all that great information. I'm so proud of you, and it's sad that we're not having the march this year, but I think these other activities are really going to – people are used to doing things online now, and it's going to be really, really successful.
Yeah, one thing I did want to say was our national day of MMIW is actually on May 5th. So all of the artwork that you create, especially for on our day two virtual art workshop, that day, any artwork that you create, we ask you that you save it for the national day on May 5th. And we'll actually be having a art display on the Minnesota State Capitol lawn. And so we, you know, we're asking for donations of art, any art, anything that you can do to spread awareness, show your awareness and support. We ask for that. So I want to thank you so much, and for giving me the opportunity. And, you know, it's all of us working together that really helped make this possible. And I can't wait for next year and what this is going to look like, if it's going to be virtual. We're hoping it's we can be, you know, together in community with each other. But this is a collaborative work, and it needs to stay collaborative and with our whole community. So I want to say miigwech, and thank you so much for this platform, this space to share the amazing work that's going on. So
what a great job. Pini Gigi and Helica, for all you do and your organization. Hey, we'll be right back after this short break, Wendy.
Yeah, Bob Blake's up.
That's right.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Robbins Kaplan LLP protects and defends American Indian tribes. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan LLP seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Hey, Minnesota, it's Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and host of The Bradcast. Weeknights at 7 on AM 950.
Hey, Cudigy to everyone. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio Network. In 2017, as a response to the shocking events that transpired at Standing Rock and the lack of accurate and honest information coming from local and mainstream media, we felt we had to do something about it. That is why we created Native Roots Radio, then Pilots Progressive Party, and finally, the new Native Symposium. We're still here. These shows have been supported by local businesses, and as you all know, unfortunately, they are no longer able to support us during this difficult time of the pandemic. This is why I'm here today, to ask you for your support. We feel it is so important to continue to bring this important information to you. Your support will help continue production and airtime costs. So please, if you can, visit Patreon Native Roots Radio Network and help in any way you can. Pini Gi, and thank you for your support.
We have vital information we would like to share with you. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on testing sites, isolation space, vaccines, housing assistance, and food resources. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19 or has questions to determine if you should get tested, please call them at 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986. That's 651-304-9986.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for clear skies tonight with a low of 13 below. Thursday, some light snow with a high near 1. Friday, partly sunny with a high of 1 below. And Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 2 below. Use Snap Construction for your next home improvement project. You can trust Snap as they're an A-rated Angie's List Super Service Award-winning contractor. Plus, they're the first company in the metro to push the lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Call 612-333-SNAP for a free no-obligation quote or visit snapconstruction.com.
Anine, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Well, it's Wednesday, Wendy, and what does that mean to us? It means the solar news with Solar Bear, and this is Robert Blake. Welcome, Robert.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
It's going.
How you doing, Robert?
Going good. We're freezing. I think Wendy went outside and checked it out, but I haven't been outside since.
This is like the climate change, right? This is what happens with the jet stream. It brings down, the Arctic air, and it gets trapped down here. So, everyone, this is why we have to switch to a renewable energy future.
Mm-hmm. Yep, right on.
Oh, and a quick little note here, Robert. Mm-hmm. Solar works better when it's colder out.
What? Oh, my God.
Yep.
Wow. I thought the opposite, but that's interesting news.
Solar is 20% more efficient when it's colder.
Wow.
Well, like today, it was very, very cold, but we had a very, very beautiful sunny day. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Well, so what do you got for us this week? I know you have a lot.
Yeah. I've got four amazing stories, Robert. Four amazing stories. And the first one is the auto industry is putting together a national rollout, right? $250 billion plan to roll out electric vehicles in this country.
Whoa.
Yes. And so that's what they're planning on doing. And I think this is really exciting because why do we need a pipeline? I mean, if like the things that are using all the oil and gas are going to be going electric, like why do we need the fine-free pipeline, Robert? I don't understand. I'm sorry. Call me, you know, behind the times. But if the auto industry, which uses the most gas, oil, is going to be switching over to electric vehicles, why do we need this pipeline? Just saying.
No, I'm with you on that.
The next story, right, is the House Ways and Means Subcommittee has introduced the Growing Renewable Energy and Efficiency Now Act. So what this is basically is they're going to use the tax code to combat the threat of climate change, basically expanding to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to build on the successful tax incentives like the investment tax credit, the ITC. And the other thing about this, my recommendation, is they need to include, you know, some the appraisal process in the HUD, the Housing Urban Development Underwriting Guidelines for renewable energy products. So, yeah, that would be huge because that means that everyone would probably want to refinance their home, but include something like solar on top of it, right?
Wow.
That would build like equity in their home, right? So, you know, I think this is huge, and I think this is a nice step into that. And I would really like to see that happen with this new kind of bill. And so the next story, Robert, is the Seattle City Council on Monday approved the commercial energy codes that will advance electrification in the new city buildings.
Oh.
So basically, yeah, insulation, space heating, water heating, the code requires all commercial, multifamily, three stories to be wired for future electrification. Now, this is huge, right? Because this means that anything that was going to be built or anything that now is happening needs to be at least put together so that, you know, it's not going to have like fossil fuels like baked into it, right? So more renewable energy, more efficient buildings, less means greenhouse gases. Now, this is my recommendation, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota has a state law that preempts these local ordinances from happening. This needs to change, Minnesota. So we need to get on our lawmakers and tell them that we want to go the way of the Seattle City Council is going over there in Washington, because this is a great, great, great policy recommendation. And I hope that there's some like state legislator mm-hmm. that is listening to this that says, hey, I want to take up this fight because this is good for the community. This is good for the planet. And this is good for jobs.
Exactly.
Like this is good for great jobs.
You know what it makes me think of, Robert, the Highland Park High Bridge that they're building here. Hopefully that they're going to be putting more renewable energy there, and the housing that they put there will have solar.
Right.
I wonder if it does.
The Highland area? I don't
the
know.
Highland,
but
it's called the
Highland instead of the Ford Parkway. Yeah, I'm confused because
Highland
I'm old.
Highland Bridge, I think
yeah.
it's called, or something like that. It's a big community. I don't remember how many people they said were going to be there.
10,000.
10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great idea, Wendy, because think about this. You got the Highland, you got the Reconnect Rondo project, and you got the Hillcrest development. We could put like all of St. Paul to work on these projects. I mean, we're coming off of like another depression, right? What a great way to put St. Paul people to work, Minnesotans to work, create good jobs, and then also battle climate change at the same time. Great idea, Wendy. I think that's awesome, and that's really what we should do. I hope there's some city council member listening to the program.
Hey, we got some phone numbers and emails we can share.
I just emailed my city council member today. So
wow, yeah. That'll be quick.
Yeah.
So that's a great segue into this next story, right? This is our last story. So the Illinois Democrats introduced a Clean Energy Jobs Act. I have an idea. Why don't the Minnesota legislation introduce the same kind of Green Energy Jobs Act, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this could be some type of, like, bipartisan legislation that I think that all of our Minnesota, like, you know, leaders could get behind and, like, put Minnesota to work, right? And doing green energy jobs around the state of Minnesota. If Illinois is doing it, why can't Minnesota do it? That's my question, right?
Exactly. And I think Minnesota can do it better. One thing I wanted to ask you real quick, did you see the art renderings of Rondo over the freeway where they were reestablishing Rondo as a neighborhood and they were going to do it over the freeway, like put land and everything on there?
Yep. It's called the Reconnect Rondo Project. And a really good friend of mine named Keith Baker is a part of that whole project and is actually leading it and is just doing a wonderful job. And a lot of that is about just getting people jobs, getting people like Solar Bear in there to do some work. He loves Solar Bear. And so I think it's really exciting. And that is just, there's got these three big projects, right? You got the Ford, you've got the Hillcrest, and you got the Reconnect Rondo. I'm telling you, Robert, let's put people in St. Paul to work with those projects. That's what I would love to do.
With nice union jobs and bring the bring the union back to the DFL.
Absolutely. And one more thing, I want to send a big shout out to a listener who emailed me and said that he listens religiously every week to the Solar News with the Solar Bear, and Chris Berry. He says that he's in his garage. He listens every Wednesday, and it's because of him that the Solar News with Solar Bear is on. So thank you very much, Chris, for supporting Native Roots Radio Network and the Solar News with Solar Bear.
Yeah, we got to get him a T-shirt, a Resist shirt.
Absolutely.
Do you got any more of those? No, I'm just kidding.
Send us his
No,
size.
Amy Klobuchar took mine.
Yeah.
Hey, Robert, I just want to say one last thing, too. I want to thank Winona and Tara today and Jim Bear Jacobs and the other people that were on the Line 3 national call today. It went really great. And as usual, Winona brought down the house. But yep. And bringing awareness to what's happening at Line 3 and everything. So I just wanted to share that, too.
Yeah, well, we got a couple more minutes, Robert, and I wanted to ask you, too, another question about about having your house worth more money with solar panels, that law. What was that law again?
Yeah, so what's happening, right? The House Ways and Means Committee is putting together the Grow Renewable Energy and Efficiency Now Act, and what is really interesting about this is the National Renewable Energy Laboratory did a study that found that homes with solar on it rose by 20% more.
Whoa.
On average. Yeah. And when you think about amortizing out a solar system over 30 years, what kind of value that's going to bring to your home? Probably upwards of about $100,000, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a really good opportunity that we could really advance like renewable energy on homes and really get people jobs. Mm-hmm. and also put some equity into the homeowner's value and raise the property value. So I am super excited about this. And I hope that's what happens here.
That'd be great because years ago I used to appraise homes and you just automatically add value to your house if you have solar panels, period. Boom.
Absolutely, Robert. And so you figured, Robert, take a $15,000 solar system, amortize it out over 30 years. It's probably about $100,000. So you just put $85,000 equity on top of your loan, right?
And not only that, you're giving back energy to the energy company or selling back.
Yep. And the other part about this is a much better plan than that joke of a BS that Wall Street was selling people back like 10 years ago when we had the mortgage crisis.
Oh.
You're a physical thing on top of your home. This is going to produce energy. It's like passive income. I mean, this is a no-brainer.
Wow, exactly. Wow, that's exciting news. And I want you to – we've only got like a minute left here. I want you to just give a quick shout-out to how people can get hold of Solar Bear and also your nonprofit.
Yes. Everyone, you could reach me at robert@nativesun.org or robert@solarbear.earth. And once again, you know, like the Solar Bear says, to remember to solar on. And that is the Solar News with the Solar Bear.
Hey, I don't even need to say anything. Peeny Geegee, Robert, thank you so much for being on. Robert's on every Wednesday. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
We are a loosened nation.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org, mn350.org, or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan, LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street. Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods where customer service is a priority and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
We are a loosened nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh!
Oh!
I didn't see Ogama
didn't
join in on that.
Bob Blake is great. I love his energy. He really has so much energy.
Yeah, and a lot of great things going on, and a lot of just the information. I know a couple weeks ago it was really funny. He brought in all these stories, and again, all of a sudden, 2 days later, we saw it on the national news, which was mind-blowing for
us.
I
think, yeah, it is. It really is. So we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and Angelica was awesome, and really good guest here. So, you know, Wendy, tell everybody this is the sacred animal section, and we talk about fins and people, beings with fins and tails and
absolutely.
On all fours and
absolutely.
Little doggies.
Everything. Yeah. Everything from fish to elephants. We talk about it all. We care about it all. At least I do.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, I found this really cool article in NPR wrote this article, and it's called Patience is a Virtue, How Northern Minnesota Wolves Ambush Their Prey. Hmm. And it was written by Dan Cracker from Duluth, and it was dated today. Today's February 10th at 4 a.m. Wolves that roam Minnesota's forests hunt moose, deer, in packs, often by outrunning and outlasting their prey. But new research shows that wolves in the region around Voyageurs National Park also employ sophisticated ambush hunting tactics to catch and kill beavers, an important source of food for wolves during the summer and early fall. In a study published just this past Tuesday in the journal Behavioral Ecology, researchers from the Voyageurs Wolf Project, a collaboration between the University of Minnesota and the National Park, document how wolves will often quietly wait 8 to 12 hours in a single spot for a beaver to pass by, and have evolved over hunting tactics specifically tailored for hunting the beaver. It's the first study to systematically analyze how wolves ambush their prey, and the latest in a string of surprising findings from the project in and around Voyageurs National Park that have turned upside down assumptions and stereotypes of how wolves in northern Minnesota survive during the summer. Earlier studies have shown that wolves, and I was surprised to hear this, consume large quantities of blueberries, and for the first time documented wolves hunting freshwater fish as a seasonal food source. The researchers have also quantified just how much wolves rely on beavers for food. They discovered beavers can constitute up to 42% of a pack's diet from April till October, while one wolf on average kills around 7 beavers per year around the park. Researchers found one wolf that had eaten 28 beavers in one season. This new study shows just how they do it. The findings are only possible because of new technology. Since 2015, researchers have outfitted wolves from 7 different packs in and around the park with GPS collars that transmit location data every 20 minutes. That allows them to zoom in on wolves' predation habits at a much finer scale than previous collars. Whenever a wolf lingers at a spot for more than 20 minutes, researchers mark the place and then visit it on foot to look for clues of what may have happened there, the place where the wolf bedded down in the grass, or the remains of the kill. When a beaver is killed, often all that is left are the two large incisors that they use to cut down trees. A new study released from the Voyageurs Wolf Pack shows how wolves use sophisticated ambushing strategies to hunt these beavers. Over the past 5 years, researchers estimate they've searched nearly 12,000 locations. At those spots, they documented nearly 750 places where wolves waited to ambush beavers but were unsuccessful, and another 214 locations where they succeeded in killing a beaver. Among their findings, wolves almost always choose ambushing sites downwind from beavers. Beavers have extremely poor eyesight, so they rely mostly exclusively on their keen sense of smell to detect predators. Wolves appear to have learned this through time. The results are very clear, says Gable. 89 to 94% of the ambushing sites were downwind, where beavers were likely unable to smell the wolves. Wolves chose ambushing sites just a few feet where the beavers are active on land, again suggesting that the wolves had learned beavers cannot see them. Wolves often choose ambushing sites along beaver trails, where they travel to cut down trees for their dams, as far away from the water as possible, suggesting that wolves have learned that if beavers are able to make it back to the water, they have a much better chance of escaping. Wolves are extraordinarily patient. Wolves waited on average of 4 hours during each stakeout, but they often waited 8 to 12 hours or more, and one wolf even waited in ambush for 30 hours, said Austin Hopkins, a co-author of the study. Beavers are a lot harder to kill than scientists previously thought. Despite their poor eyesight and their apparent clumsiness on land, wolves succeeded in killing beavers in fewer than one-third of the ambush attempts. Many successful beaver kills appeared to be the result of chance encounter. And the last thing I just want to say is they can spend a bunch of time, meaning the wolves can spend a bunch of time in effort chasing after deer fawns and adult deer with probably very limited success, Gable said. Or they can hardly move and just lie there and wait until a beaver comes along. But the wolves over time have learned how to hunt these beavers very strategically. And I just thought the article was very interesting because I'm usually talking about how people are hunting animals. And I wanted to talk about how an animal hunts another animal.
Oh, that was really cool. And then also, I had no idea that there's that many beavers that a wolf could have 28 of them.
Well, that's unusual. Usually it's only 7 per season. But again, you know, if we didn't have the predation of the wolves killing the beavers, we'd probably have an overpopulation of beavers, and then they cause problems too by building a lot of dams everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it is just the survival of the fittest, mm-hmm. and it's just nature working together in harmony and keeping everything
the balance
of ecology with animals that are predators and animals that get killed. So,
we want to protect the wolves, that's for sure.
Absolutely. We need to protect the wolves. And just thought it was interesting
that
how they're ambushing and just laying there waiting for a beaver to walk by.
Well, we got like a minute 30 left. I wonder if you wanted to play that.
I'm just kidding. I could find it really fast. And you know what? I haven't laughed hard. I've watched this like 6 times.
What do you think, Ogma? Should we play it?
I'm not a cat.
You have a filter turned on in the video settings. You might want to...
Can you hear me, Judge?
I can hear you. I think it's a filter.
It is, and I don't know how to remove it. I've got my assistant here. She's trying to, but I'm prepared to go forward with it. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
All right.
He is not a cat. We know that.
I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to the show, you are the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. I want to thank Angelica, Robert Blake, Wendy, Ogama, and I want to also say we need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. And you've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. We're the seventh generation. We're still here.
Free Leonard Peltier.
When we heal from our traumas.
When we face our...
All right, guys. Yeah, I love that cat video. I ended up seeing that, too, just during the show.